Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Hari Khalsa. I am back with my audio blog. If you've been following me, you might be wondering exactly what happened, why I took such a break. Well, on my last blog, I was talking about how I was going to my mother's. There had been some issues. You know, we didn't know. She'd already been talking about wanting to die. So, and she was on hospice. So I went back July 11th. And when I arrived, it became very clear that things were changing. Even prior to going there, I couldn't quite get a clear grasp. And, you know, I've talked about the people that I talked to prior, you know, my geriatric care manager and aides and the staff there and administrators and... But I couldn't really get a clear, but I had a sense. I had a sense. And I mean, my brother was there, but he wasn't quite tuned in to what was really going on. Even though I had told him it looked like we were, you know, she was on hospice and we were looking towards the end. He was there and he kept saying, well, she's eating in the dining room. She's in her wheelchair. And I thought, well, that's no real indication of what could happen or what is really going on. So my brother left the day I got there. I arrived in the afternoon, and I went to see her, and I knew right away that things had changed again. And how did I know? She looked thinner. She looked frailer. She was talking to me, and she was she was cognizant of who I was. But you know, if I left the room for a second, where's my daughter? Where's my daughter? Where's my daughter? And, you know, at the time, prior to my coming and during this whole process, I had thought, well, it's okay if I, and I've mentioned that in my blogs, that it was okay if I wasn't there. But I realized that, you know, something had shifted and she really wanted me there. And did that matter to me? I guess it did, because from the 11th, every day you could see the changes, every single day. When I first got there, I had to help them adjust the medication because her pain level had increased so dramatically. It hurt to touch her. I mean, by the third day that I was there, she couldn't really do anything for herself. They were, you know, she was really slowly stopping eating. Really the only thing she would eat when I was there was her coffee ice cream. And that was just a few bites here and there. And, you know, we would try to get her to eat anything. I mean, it wasn't important to me. It was just something to do, the age that were there, you know. But she really had begun to decide, and her body had decided that it was time to say goodbye. So she continued on this trajectory. But the pain, I mean, just to touch her, it was so painful. And, you know, they would want to wash her. And just to move her, she would cry out, and it was really, really hard to watch. And as a caregiver, you know, the one thing you don't want in these situations, in any situation, is to see your loved one suffering and see your loved one not getting the care that they need. Or it's not that she wasn't getting the care she needed, that, you know, that she wasn't getting the medication to not have the to not have the pain. And one of the issues that I ran into right then was that, you know, the staff, the nurses were having a difficult time giving her the pain medicine because she was on morphine. And so I had to have a conversation with each one of them, very gently tell them that this is my mother's wish that she not be in pain. It's my wish that she not be in pain. And we're not coming back from this. So what I had to do was I had to make sure that there weren't any medicines, not one medicine, that was a pain medicine. That was what we call as needed or PRN when asked for, because the nurse had to evaluate whether my mother was in pain, or my mother, when they asked, she had to say, yes, I'm in pain. And sometimes she couldn't figure out what they were asking her. And so when I was there, I became her voice. But it became very clear to me, probably within the first day that I was there, that we needed to change everything. We needed to make sure that she was getting enough medicine. So I called hospice, or I saw the hospice nurse, and I said, listen, we need to make this regular because they're not going to do it. It's hard for them. It's hard for them to give them this much medication. And, you know, it's the way people are. I don't fault them for it, but my mother was suffering, and I didn't put my foot down in a very aggressive way. I just said, this is what's going to happen. And I got it to be written, so it had to be given every on a regular basis. And it was. And what we did, and she also was incredibly agitated. You know, I think the whole process had become too much for her. And I wouldn't say she was scared about what was going on, because that really was not what was happening. She just was tired, and she was tired of her mind. She had lost so much of her mind, and she was just tired. She was tired of not being able to communicate, and she just wanted it all over. And I don't know what else is going on. I mean, I don't know what goes on in the death process. Nobody does. We have no point of reference. We have no understanding. I mean, were there people coming to visit? She always talked about all the people in the room prior to her deciding to die, or prior even to this process becoming sped up in some way, accentuated. She talked about, you know, she would have talk about people in her room, especially at night. So, you know, I don't know what was going on. I don't know if she was talking to God the whole time. But anyway, whatever it was, she was agitated, and it was hard for her. So I got them to do the medicine. And, you know, this is a real interesting part for everyone, I think. Really, what I did is I gave her medicine for agitation, and I gave her medicine. I agreed to have medicine, increased amount of pain medicine. And, you know, it really calmed her down, and it really allowed her to go through whatever she had to go through. And again, I have no idea what that is. And did I regret at any minute, at any time, that she was in at times slept most of the time? And that's part of what we see with a lot of people that are dying. They just start sleeping a lot. The body starts shutting down. And no, I never had any regret that I had increased her pain medicine, because prior to that, if you touched her, she would scream. And, you know, that was so hard to take. And is there a fine balance between medicating and not medicating, and someone being conscious? I don't know. There probably is. But I was not willing, because every time she was awake, it was so difficult for her. And, you know, from 5 days from when I first got there, she was awake more. I mean, she was awake at times. And it isn't like we had great conversations, but there were moments when she was lucid, and, you know, she would say just say things to me. She, you know, I had to reassure her I would take care of my brother and make sure that everything in his world was okay. And I also had to make sure that she understood that I was okay, that everything between us was okay, and that I loved her. And so the mantra at that time, she started just in her conscious moments, just telling everyone how much she loved them. And it was very interesting to me how much she talked to people about that, and she really... She really appreciated, people really appreciate hearing that. Though it became harder. Another interesting thing that began to happen is the staff really began to understand that my mother was dying. And then it was close. Although everyone tried to say, well, we don't know when it is, we can't tell. But you could tell every day she declined, every single day. And I realized something that was very interesting to me. The staff on the assisted living had not, usually the people in the assisted living are sent down to the nursing home. And because of what I'd worked out, or because of what the ombudsperson had said about my mother staying where she is during hospice and the dying process, and that was her home, and that there would be no different care upstairs, that the nurses could come up as they were doing anyway. So the staff was intimately, on the assisted living floor, was intimately involved with my mother's passing and dying in the process. And that was different for them. And, you know, I really tried to include them. It was very intimate and it was very loving. I would watch the staff come in and wash her, and she couldn't do anything for herself. And they did it with such grace and kindness and love. And it was really, I think it was very special for them. They really adored my mother. And, you know, it was really hard for people. Some people would come in and they'd talk to her and help her, and they would just leave and start crying. And there was nothing I could do about that. But she really was loved by many. And so as the process continued, each day, as I said, it got worse. You know, she continued to decline and decline and decline. And about 3 days prior to her death, this was about, you know, she died on the 22nd, but about 3 days prior to that, on a Monday, she died on Wednesday, on Monday, my husband came, and it was the only time I said, "Mom," she hadn't opened her eyes in 24 hours, and I said, "Mom, Siri Call is here," and she opened her eyes and looked at him. It was very sweet. It was one of those moments that you cherish, because the effort I knew it took for her to do that, but the love was really profound. And so for those last 48 hours, that 72 hours, it, you know, we were there a lot. We sat with her. We chanted. We held her hand. It was very graceful. The staff was so loving and so graceful, and the nurses got really into it. I mean, I had to have a conversation with them about 5 days prior. "Look, we got to do this. She's suffering, and I can't stand it. And this is what she wants. And I know it's hard for you, and I know you like her, love her, but we got to do this." And so they participated, and they made the switch. And sometimes when I said, "Well, maybe she doesn't need the meds now because she's been sleeping so much," she says, "Oh, no, hurry. She's doing, you know, we need to keep it this way so she doesn't have any pain." And I thought, wow, thank you, thank you, thank you. So there was this energy around my mother. There was this grace and energy that was really incredible. And, you know, the interesting part about the dying process is, like I said, we only know what we see, that we can record. And one of the things, of course, is that people begin to sleep more, whether they're on meds or not. If they're not on meds, then their sleep is restless and painful. But so she was obviously sleeping, and then about 5 days prior to her death, she just basically stopped eating and drinking, maybe 6 days. And that became a little more difficult. You know, we had to sort of wipe her mouth with water and try to get her to drink this and that. You know, and we had to make sure all the meds now were liquid, because she couldn't, you know, she couldn't participate in anything. And then about day three, you know, 72 hours prior to her death, her breathing changed. And it was really difficult to watch this, because she would have three, and people say this is common, and I'm talking about it because I think it's really important to know that there's a process that occurs in these situations, unless it's, of course, it's a sudden death, but you know, something that you can understand. Well, this isn't odd. This isn't so odd. She would have these three regular breaths, and then she wouldn't breathe for like 20, 30 seconds, and be like, "Oh my God, this is it." But no, that went on for almost 2 days, and then Wednesday morning early, I got a phone call early in the morning. I'd gone home. And that things had changed, and, you know, her pulse was increased and she had a bit of a fever. So my husband and I went in immediately, and her breath had changed. She was basically panting, and you could tell that we were getting close, because you could tell the work to breathe was becoming difficult. And as the day progressed, she died at 5, but as the day progressed, we could see the intense energy it took for her to breathe. And my husband and I were there, and, you know, interestingly enough, the last couple hours, people knew this was it. It was coming. The hospice nurse had been there. She said, "I'm going to stay around. I'll be in the building," because she had other clients there, patients there. And my husband and I were sitting with her, and we just looked at each other, and we there was like something. You could almost feel the energy. You know, from my spiritual, you could feel the energy of death. That God was present. Those of you who don't believe in God, you could just switch that. You could. It was an energy where the body was shutting down. You could see. You know. You could sense this incredible moment in time. And so, I don't know how I knew, but I knew when the moment was, and I jumped up and I said to my husband, "This is it." And it was. And it was, for me, I was able to chant. I was able to be with her. I was able to tell her I love her. I was able to say a prayer. I was able to, tell her that, she's going to be with my father. I was able to just hold her hand and be with her and kiss her goodbye. And I think that was very powerful for me, because I knew that my mother wanted to go. She couldn't take it anymore. She couldn't take not having her mind whole. And she wanted to be with my father, and she just wanted out of the body. So, there was a joy and there was a sadness for me. And so, the process, that process was there, and it is the finality of life. It is final. There is no retake. Let's do that again. No, it's done. And I think my mother and the staff didn't come in for like 2 hours, and they just let us, I think people knew. And, we just sat with her for a few minutes and prayed. And then we had to call. I called the hospice nurse, and this is what you do, because when someone dies, they have to be pronounced dead by a certified person who can do that, and that usually means, in some states, nurses can do it, doctors. So then she was in the building. She came right away. She pronounced her, and then she said to me, "Well, what do you want to do here?" So, "Well, I want to wash her. I want to clean her. And dress her." So, we did that, and Tina, her caregiver, came back. I called her, and she came, and, we very gently washed her. My husband left. He said, "I can't do this." So, we cleaned her, and that was very soothing for me. And then the hospice nurse says, I said, "Well, do we have to, I guess, what do we do now?" She said, "Well, it's up to you. You can sit here with her for as long as you want. You can sit overnight if you want, and then call the funeral director." And I thought, No. I need this to move. For me, I needed it to keep going. Let's keep this ball rolling. Because I'd been sitting with her for days, for weeks, for 10 days. I'd been sitting with her, and I didn't need to sit anymore. And I needed this journey to continue. So she said, "Okay, I'll call the funeral home." And, one thing I had done prior to this, and I really recommend this, and I don't know if I mentioned it in my last one, but I went to the funeral. No, I don't think so, because I did it when I was there this last time. Get everything arranged ahead of time at the funeral home. Go get everything in the system. Pick my mother was going to be cremated, so I picked the urn. It had to be a special size because her ashes were being buried with my father's. And, if you get everything done, then it's so much smoother. It's so much easier because the forms are not fun and you got to talk about things. I mean, when I went with my friend took me, and when I went, I really, it was hard enough to do it then when my mother was still alive. And you can't really pay in advance. I mean, when we knew my mother was going to die soon, sometimes if you're doing it years in advance, you can do what you call death insurance, and, you can put money aside. They say this is how much it's going to cost, and that's how much they have to be held to that. So, I mean, there's probably some criteria for if it, like, you know, it's 50 years, you know, 30 years or something, but it is worth it to do that. So they came, they knew my mother was imminent, and they, you know, they came. Now the interesting part for me is that, you know, since I've never been through this before, with, you know, being sort of on the ground doing everything, the funeral director comes, or the person when the funeral home people come, and then there's what they call the body retrieval team, removal team. And they're like sort of separate, I guess they're a separate company. Anyway, they came, and it was like, I have to say, if any of you have ever seen 6 Feet Under, that show, that's what I felt it was like, because the one person was like, you know, this big, burly, you know, looked like a, you know, muscular guy, who walked in and knew Tina and starts, "Hey Tina, how are you? What's going on?" And then this other one was this woman who looked like she was Morticia's daughter. It kind of made me open my eyes and kind of giggle, because I thought, "Wow, this is 6 Feet Under." So anyway, they came in, and they we had dressed my mother, and, you know, even had her little hat on that she liked to wear the best. And we put that on, and, you know, they wrapped her up and took her out, and we walked her to the hearse, and that was it for that part. So, you know, and people were, you know, we had to walk through the nursing home part to get, you know, to the hearse, and, you know, people were very respectful and kind and gentle, and so that was, you know, that part. And of course, then you have to go home and deal with it, you know, "Oh my God, my mother died," and just kind of keep it together. And, well, you don't have to keep it together. I mean, I just, you know, it was so much, it had been so much of a journey. We were staying with my friends, and we went back, and, you know, we sat and we talked, and, you know, that's what you got to do. I knew she was going to die, so I wasn't, it wasn't as a shock, but it's a shock. The whole process was a shock. So then the next part of this whole journey is, you know, they took my mother to the funeral home, and there was really nothing else for me to do. But the next day, they called me, the funeral home, which they said they would do, because I asked very specific, "How does this work?" And the way it works is that the next thing that has to happen is that the death certificate has to be done before anything else can happen, before burial, cremation. So, you know, what I, so the, so I had to go, and this is an official form. Excuse me for coughing. I got sick pretty much after my mother died. So the death certificate is a vital statistic, and you have, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this, is that you have to make sure all the data is 100% correct, because once it's in, it's a little bit of a hassle to get it changed. You have to, and what they ask for is, you know, date of birth, name, first name, last name, and you can put the middle name, but the middle name is not, Social Security doesn't accept middle names. I mean, it doesn't matter. Date of death, her mother and her mother's maiden name or father's name, where she was born, where she lived, what kind of work she did. So it was, you know, I have to say, it was remarkably stressful, that part. And we had to go in and sit, and you have to review it. And I brought all my doc, and I had reviewed it like 5 times before I said, "Yeah, this is okay." And then, and what happens then is that this has already been sent to the doctor has to verify the cause of death, because that has to go on the death certificate. And so the cause of death goes on there. The doctor signs it, and then it goes to the vital statistics and the medical examiner. But my mother, because the doctor had signed it, didn't know to go through that. So now everything's electronic, and it just depends on how fast the doctor signs it. And the doctor is the one for this hospice, is known for being very fast. So, you know, we could have cremated her the next day, but as it is, we cremated her on that following Friday. And so, you know, here you are, you know, you kind of just, what I found is you're kind of just holding yourself together, and you are, yeah, you're holding yourself together. You know, you got to get this stuff done, because if you know, in my situation, there wasn't, my husband was helping me, but I had to do this because I was the, you know, the person. I was the daughter. I was the family member, and so I had to do all this stuff. So I couldn't really let anything down. So I had to arrange the cremation, and we wanted to have a little service before. So some of my friends came. It was very sweet. The hospice chaplain came, and he sang and read a poem. And it was very small, and again, it was very intimate. The, you know, her caregiver was there, Tina, who was, really loved her, and it was so, so sweet, you know. And then we took her, we walked her down to the cremation, the crematorium, and, you know, I mean, I sound so calm about this. Let me tell you, you know, I had to just kind of keep a lid on it, you know, just to, you know, I cried. There's no question I cried. And then just as we said this, there's a prayer we say, and I said this prayer, and then one of my friends, they shut the door and they pushed the button to start the stuff, started going, and one of my friends said, "Okay, Addie," and that just cracked me up. Like, you go, girl. You know, she this was happening, and I thought I would be like totally freaked out by that part. And there was a part of me that wasn't. When she said that, I felt so much better about the whole process. You know, I don't know. And then, you know, you kind of got to leave. And I had a luncheon for people. I invited people, didn't come to the cremation, which I understood. You know, it was very personal and intimate. That's a moment, you know, when only, I don't know, it's just very intimate and personal. And so I had this lunch at this Italian restaurant, the last place I'd taken her to eat on her 90th birthday, last time she went out to eat. And it was very sweet, and it was very loving. And, you know, I really recommend that, some kind of meal and activity, because it kind of helps you to get some perspective and talk and laugh and eat. And so then, you know, then came the process of waiting for the remains. That's about a 48-hour process or 72, I can't remember. But she was cremated out on Friday, and I could have picked up her remains on Tuesday, but I picked them up on Wednesday, and I picked them up on Thursday. And, you know, that's another thing, picking up, you know, it's like so out of anything you do any other time. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, you got to think, this is just stuff in here, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, you go and you pick it up, and, you know, when we got in there, they have it sort of in this special room, in this, like, glass viewing place, and it's really quite something. And they said, "Well, you want them all?" I said, "No, please." So we had, they gave it to us in a bag, and so that was the beginning of the end. And so I only did a half hour today, and I'm going to pick up tomorrow, and I'm going to talk about what the rest of it was like. So I'm going to go now, because I think I'm going to start coughing. And we're almost done. So thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy. God bless.